Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, yo, what's it do, everybody? This is Lee from Lee and Keys Real Talk. We got a live show for you tonight. We got a UFC 267 review, and we got a UFC 268 preview. So, you know, a lot happened this past weekend. We got a new light heavyweight champion, Glover Teixeira, and a absolute shocker. We got a new interim. What's that, bantamweight? That's bantamweight, right? Yeah, we got a new interim bantamweight title holder and Professor Yan. And, you know, Islam beat Hooker. So we got a lot to talk about, man, but we're going to jump into it real quick. We'll do this UFC 267 review real quick, and then we're going to jump right into 268. But let me do this and do my co-host. What's up, Keys? What's going on with you, man? How you doing?
Yo, we out there, man. I'm good, bro. I'm good. I hope everything's good with you. I'm on board with that. Let's hit the ground running because we got to run through the card we just watched and then go into the card that we're gonna watch in a couple of days. So let's just kick it right off.
Yeah, man. So let's just start with the we're just gonna jump into the co-main event and the main event. You know, Petrion beat Corey Sandhagen. And what I thought was a good fight, but not a great fight, a good performance by Petrion, an okay performance by Sandhagen. What was your thoughts of that fight, man? Because I loved your tweet after the first round. And then after that, things kind of changed, man. So what did you think about that fight, bro?
Yeah, so I just thought that Corey came out, you know, he looked great in the first round. I feel like he was in control of that first round, the whole round. I had him 10-9 clear in the first round, and I thought, okay, Sandhagen's connecting on Jan. Jan looked a little intimidated in the first round to me. It looked like he was almost a little surprised at how quick Corey started in the first round, and he kind of took over the octagon in the first round, and I think Jan looked a little bit surprised by that. Maybe he wasn't expecting him to kind of come out the gate swinging like that, and he did. I had Sandhagen 10-9 in the first round, and then honestly, I had Jan winning every round in the fight after that. You know, I thought Jan 2, 3, 4, 5 were all clear rounds for Jan to meet. I saw other people having 3-2s, and I saw some people had Sandhagen 3-2. I don't really know where they came up with that of him winning three rounds. That kind of sounds a little bit wild to me, but it is what it is. Yeah, I think it was a good fight.
Yeah, I thought Sandhagen came out, did some things early in the fight. But I think once Jan figured out that Sandhagen really didn't have any power, that's when he started walking him down. I think Sandhagen, he's a volume guy as far as, like, pop-shotting people. But pop shots don't hurt nobody. Pop shots only hurt when you follow it up with something big or something powerful or something that your opponent doesn't see coming. And he doesn't have that in his game right now. I mean, he's a tough guy. He has a fan-friendly style because he's constant movement, constant, you know, jabbing, throwing his jab out there. But until he comes up with something that he can become, he needs to become a finisher. I mean, technical fights are cool. Technical fighters are cool. But when you don't have power, basically you're going to get walked down every fight. And that's what happened against Dillashaw when he fought Dillashaw. He kind of came out in the first round, established that he was going to be there for the fight. But then you saw Dillashaw basically start walking him down, starting in the middle of the second round or early third round. You know, he just didn't fear his power. So Corey needs to become a finisher, whether it's on the mat, whether it's – I think he just needs to work on his striking game, to be honest. because his hand movement and his constant movement is good defense, but good defense is not going to win fights. I had him win in the first round and the fifth round. I thought the fifth round, Jan was just out there making sure he didn't lose the fight. When I first looked at the fight, I had the second round going to Corey, but when I went back and I rewatched the fight, he definitely lost the second round. So I had it 3-2, but it really wasn't like it was controversial or anything that you would be like, damn, Corey got the short end of the stick. No, Corey just, he's missing something from his game. And until he improves that something that's missing, I think he's going to keep coming up short on the judges' scorecards. He might become the new Bobby Green, if you know what I'm saying, Keith.
Man, how you gonna do Bobby Green like that? Isn't he fighting on this card?
Yeah, he's fighting Al Kinter.
Oh man, okay, we'll get to that later. We'll get to that later. But I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, my breakdown is a little bit less technical than yours. You definitely are more precise in what me might need to fix for me. I mean, the fight, I feel like the issue that I pointed out when he fought TJ was still present versus Jan. And the thing that I said, and I think you disagreed with this, and Evan might have even been on here, I think he disagreed with it too. You guys said you didn't really see that from Corey, but I definitely saw it versus TJ, is that in the later rounds, it seemed like, I told you all that it seemed like he got mentally tired versus TJ. It seemed like, you know, rounds, I want to say, like somewhere in the third round, and then you could really notice it in like the fourth and fifth round. It seemed like, and this was another five-round fight, and I feel like I could see it here too, that it wasn't so much that Jan had him, he looked fatigued mentally, but he seemed like he was starting to seem a little bit predictable, a little bit too predictable. It seemed like he kind of didn't know what else to do at a certain point. And I feel like that's pretty close to what happened in the TJ fight. I think TJ just moves in such an elusive, you know, unpredictable way. TJ's style is so random and sporadic, it's really hard to tell what he's going to throw at you. So I think he had him mentally tired there. As where Jan, I think Corey just, he looked like to me, I don't know, but he looked like he just wasn't sure of what to do once it came to round 3, 4, 5. It seemed like, yeah, especially in 4 and 5, it seemed like he was starting to load up on the flying knees again, which is, you know, similar to what we saw versus TJ, where he was just, I told y'all, I was like, I feel like he was throwing strikes and doing different things that I feel like he just was doing just to, like, he was kind of throwing stuff at a wall and hoping it sticks. You know, I feel like that's what he was doing. And it seemed like in both fights, and those are the first two fights I've ever watched for Sanhagen. So, you know, maybe that's the way he always is. But if that's the case, I feel like that's a downfall for him because, you know, especially when he's at a point where he's only going to be fighting, you know, basically number one contender fights and title fight. He's right there, you know, still. He had two good fights, but, you know, I still feel like he's probably one fight out of being right there again, maybe two fights out, you know, depending on how things go. And I do think that's something that I think he should fix, you know. It just seems like he became predictable versus Jan. And I feel like Jan could kind of tell what he was going to do, you know, come rounds 4 and 5. And versus TJ, it was a similar thing. I think he got a little bit sloppy. Now, I think once he started feeling, you know, the energy leave him, you know, 15 minutes in, he was drained, and I just feel like you could see the fatigue on him.
Yeah. That's what I mean by it's something missing from his game. It's something that he has to, I don't know what the something is, but he has to add something to his game. But, you know, the guy's a tough guy. And, you know, hats off to him when DC asked him at the end, did he thought he won the fight? And he was like, to be honest, no, I didn't think I won the fight. I didn't think I did enough. I thought, you know, that the dude can punch. And, you know, he gave Jan a bunch of credit. But he also admitted that, you know, that he had some downfalls in the fight. And normally you don't hear that from guys in the post-fight, you know, especially if they lose by decision in a tough fight. You know, they normally be, you know, complaining about the judges or, you know. But, hey, he lost the fight. But to jump to the main event, and what I would say was a major league shocker. Jan Blachowicz versus Glover Teixeira for the light heavyweight title. Man, you talking about, man, I was floored when I was watching the fight. I couldn't believe my eyes when I was watching the fight. Glover Teixeira was a man possessed when the bell rung to start the fight to the bell rang to end the fight. Glover went balls to the wall as if he knew this was his last chance of ever getting a title shot. And he went in there and did his thing. I'm quite sure that I wasn't the only one. So I'm going to let Keys tell y'all how he felt when he was watching that fight.
Yeah, so my thing was with that fight was I was completely and utterly shocked like you. And the thing that really confused me was that it was like in one of the opening exchanges, I want to say it was like one of the very first boxing exchanges they had, Glover already caught Jan with a big shot, and it looked like he was rocked, and I was like, man, what is going on here? Like, it just, you could tell that there was something off with Jan right off the bat. Like, it just didn't seem like his usual self. I don't know, you know, and I don't mean to, I'm not going to try to take away because Glover looked incredible. So that's the real story, you know.
Yep,
he just,
that's the story.
Like you said.
I say, yep, you're right. That's the story. He looked incredible.
Yeah, that's the real story is that Glover, you know, looked very, very, very good. You know, Glover, that it wasn't a matter of, oh, Jan didn't show up. Glover just did show up. That's the real, you know, thing I want to – that's the real emphasis I want to put down because, you know, there's been times in the past on this show where I've kind of chalked up a, you know, a fight to, oh, this, you know, so-and-so looked bad. It wasn't as much that this, you know, guy or this girl looked good. You know, I've taken that angle before, but I'm not going to do that in this one because I think it was more to, it had more to do with what you said. You know, Glover, I think, knew, okay, this is probably my last chance at becoming a world champion ever. You know, he's, I want to say 42 years of age. And, you know, even though he's looked really great, you know, in his last six fights, I think that was his sixth win in a row. Even though he's looked, you know, like he's having this, like, I don't even know. He looked like he went back 10 years in the time machine or something. That's what he's been looking like. But even though that's the case, yeah, I think he knew this might be my last shot and I'm going in there, you know, with a much bigger purpose. And I think Jan, you know, I have to bring this up. Your boy John Jones made a good point about Jan. He came out when Jan lost the fight. You knew I was going to bring this up, right?
I was going to bring it up too.
Yeah, so I actually like what your boy John Jones said, and I think he's right about this, you know, he's likely right about this, is that, you know, Jones came out and said, that's what happens when you're talking shit, preparing for the guy who's already in front of you. I think he tweeted that, you know, right after the fight. And that made sense to me, you know, while I was enjoying it during that lead up in that week and, you know, the week prior, I'm like, all right, look at champion Jan. No, he's talking his trash. But I never thought of it from the perspective of, okay, what if he's getting too clouded with what Corey Anderson is saying and, you know, what John Jones is doing and, you know, what all these other guys are doing, and what if he's not focusing on Glover? And, you know, by the way his performance was, we can speculate that maybe that had something to do with it, you know?
Yeah. And you know what? It was funny that John said that because Corey came out and tweeted the same thing. He was like, oh, I guess I ate up enough space in your head, you know, to basically cause you to drop the ball. I'm not going to give Corey, I'm not going to give that trash talk any value. I'm going to go with what you said. I just think Glover just fought with on a mission. He was a fighter on a mission. And I know if he took me by surprise watching the fight, I know he took Jan by surprise in the fight because I didn't see that coming. I didn't see him hurting Jan the way he did. And, man, I knew Glover had a good mat game, but I thought Jan could defend it. But, man, Jan just seemed to not be able to defend anything that Glover was doing. He seemed like he couldn't defend anything. So, you know, like you said, I'm not going to take away from Glover's fight. I'm not going to make excuses for Jan. But I got to go to something that you did tweet out. That was Jan's first time being a betting favorite in that fight. And that's crazy. And he lost. So,
yeah,
hey, man,
go ahead.
That's just crazy, but crazy things happen in the fight game. So, hey, we got a new light heavyweight champion. I don't know whether or not they're going to give Jan an immediate rematch because he only had one title defense. So let's see what happens, man. Maybe we get well, Anthony Smith, Glover already damn near knocked all his teeth out of his mouth. Rockets was supposed to fight. I think Rockets was supposed to fight Anthony Smith. So maybe
I think they're gonna go with Jiří Prochazka.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, I think they're gonna go with Jiří also.
So they showed him in the crowd like right after that fight.
But look, man, check this out. You know, we got a big card coming up this weekend, UFC 268. But as far as 267, what did you think of Islam versus Hooker? I didn't watch it, but I think you watched it, right?
Yeah, I saw Islam versus Hooker.
So what was your thoughts on that? And then we're going to move into
that. That was another fight that I was like, wow, I'll say this. I think you could really tell that Dan Hooker didn't, like, that he took that fight on short notice. You could tell that he, you know, wasn't prepared or, and again, I'm not trying to take away from Islam. Islam, you know, had an incredible performance, very impressive.
He's a beast.
You know, he finally fought a guy and beat a guy that is somebody who I can consider
you there, bro?
Oh, sorry about that. I was getting a call on the other line. My bad. So he finally fought a guy that I consider to be a legitimate win. You know, he got a win versus somebody legitimate. Okay, cool. And I thought he looked really great. So congrats to Islam. I just don't know what Dan Hooker's game plan was at the same time. And I'm not going to say Dan Hooker looked bad because we didn't even really get to see Dan Hooker fight. He literally went 0-1 on strikes. Like he swung one time, missed, and then got taken down and submitted. Like we didn't even get to see if he was going to look good or not. He just got, you know, wrapped up into a pretzel so fast and almost got his arm broken. And they stopped the fight. So, it is what it was. I don't know what Dan Hooker's plan was because it just seemed like he kind of was looking like he was going to charge in towards Islam and threw a strike, and it almost seemed like that he thought he was going into a kickboxing match or just like a fighting just a pure striker. That's the way it seemed. And I'm confused about that because Hooker should have been going in there, you know, going easy. He shouldn't have been running to the center of the octagon, you know, to try to strike with Islam. Like, I don't know why he would think that Islam would take the fight there, knowing that Dan Hooker's the more dangerous striker, you know, in my opinion. So
yeah,
I don't really
yeah.
know what that was. Because it didn't look like he was even watching for a takedown. Dan Hooker, it didn't even look like he was watching for a takedown. Like, it didn't – when he got taken down, there wasn't even – I don't even remember if there was any defense from the takedown. I want to say he just got taken right down. Like, he didn't even seem like he was expecting for Islam to shoot. And I'm just confused as to what was going on in his mind, like, to think that he wouldn't shoot. I don't know. Yeah, that one's kind of a mystery to me. I figure you didn't see the Chimaev fight. You want me to tell you about that?
Yeah, but I'm gonna just point one thing out about Hooker. And if you listen to the show, you know I'm not a big Dan Hooker fan. I just think the guy's overrated, Keith. It's when I watch him fight, I think he's very overrated. He doesn't even sometimes in his fights. He don't even look like a top 15 guy. He's like a guy that's trying to build a career in the UFC to me. But I didn't see this fight. But the way you talking, it just seems like he reverted to the Dan Hooker that I don't like. So, but yeah, tell me about Chimaev, man. And, bruh, really? Dana White is happy about Nate Diaz versus Chimaev? But go ahead, bro.
Yeah, so that fight was actually very similar to Islam versus Dan Hooker. It was pretty much – I don't even remember what the opening exchange was like. I don't even know. That's another fight where I don't even think Yi Yingliang – I don't even think he won landed a strike on Chimaev. I don't think he landed a strike. And he pretty much got taken down immediately. I want to say he tried to defend the takedown at first. I want to say he did, Yingliang, but then eventually, because he seemed prepared, you know, for Chimaev to try and take him down. You could see that, Yi was in preparation for that, as where Hooker didn't look like he was. And, pretty much same story. He pretty much, you know, kind of smothered, you know, Yingliang on the mat. And, he took his back pretty quick. And Yingliang was, you know, defending the submissions. You know, he held them off as long as he could. But then eventually got to a point where Chimaev got, I don't know if it was a neck crank or if he actually got under his neck and it was a rear naked choke. I think they said it was a rear naked choke, but he did get Yingliang defended his neck for a while, but eventually Chimaev. You know what I think it was? Chimaev changed course because he was making submission attempts and Yi was defending them, and then he changed course and it almost looked like he was just going for a TKO finish, which I do think the fight could have been stopped with the way Chimaev was landing on him, but he was landing a lot of strikes to his head. You know, the way guys look when they hardly cover up. Chimaev was on his back, landing shots. It looked like he was going towards a TKO. I'm like, all right, they should stop this fight. And then he, because Yi was defending his head now instead of defending his neck, Chimaev switched back to the submission attempt while Yi was still trying to recover from the shots and defend his head, thinking he was still getting hit. Chimaev switched back to the submission attempt and got right underneath his neck and flipped him over. You know what I mean? So Chimaev was like underneath him at this point, and I give him some credit. He didn't even tap, but he got choked out to the point where it definitely looked like he was unconscious. Like he was out when he didn't tap. but the ref just had to stop it because he wasn't going to tap, and then he literally got choked out. Like, he literally went, he was out. So that's how that fight went.
Yeah, man, because I'm looking at the stats. Yiling, 0-1 total strikes, 0-1 significant strikes, 0-1 head strikes. Tomorrow, 58-62, 25-25, ground control, 3 minutes and 1 second. Takedowns, 1-2, 3 submission attempts. So I think you had Hooker stats with Yi Lin, because Hooker, am I looking at the right one? Hold on, Hooker only threw like 28 strikes. So, yeah, man. The crazy part is, I think did me and you pick Yan to win the fight, or did we pick Sanhagen? I think I picked Sanhagen. I think we both picked Sanhagen. I don't know.
Yeah,
I know we did.
I think we did.
I think we was 5-1 on our picks, because everybody we picked won is 7.
I think we both picked Lukovic too, so we would have been 5-2 if we picked Sanhagen.
Oh, yeah, we played Lukovic. Yeah, that's right. So we did okay as far as our predictions last week. But look, man, we got another big card this weekend, bro. We got UFC 268, Usman versus Covington 2 for the welterweight title. We got Rose Namajunas versus Wiley Zhang for the UFC Women's Strawweight Championship. Then we got Frankie Edgar taking on Marlon Vera. I want to say it's Marlon Vera. Then we have, I don't even know why this fight up here, Burgos versus Quarantillo as the kickoff to pay-per-view. We got Justin Gaethje versus Michael Chandler. And then on the prelims, we got Kento versus Bobby Green, which should have been the main event for the prelims. I'm trying to see who else I know on this card. Shabazzan is on this card. I don't know this Pereira cat at middleweight. I don't know who headlined. Who these two guys are that headlined in the prelim?
Hold up. I'm gonna kick you some game right here. So, you talking about Alex Pereira?
Hold on, let me see. Middleweight.
He actually knocked out Israel Adesanya in his previous promotion, and now he just got signed with the UFC. This is going to be his UFC debut, but who knows how he is, but he has a knockout over Adesanya. So the dude is definitely a high level kickboxer. So he might be really good.
Yeah. So basically, they put him as the main event on the prelims because he got a knockout win over Adesanya from a previous promotion. Okay, I'm not buying it, but yeah, man. So, what fight sticks out to you on this card, bro?
I definitely don't have the full card in front of me, but let me look. The early prelims. I don't know any of these names.
I don't know
a single one of these names. We really don't have too much time, so I'm not going to go through everything. But
yeah.
I mean, Philip Hawes is supposed to be good. He's from the contender series, I believe. That Philip Hawes and Chris Curtis fight, I feel like that's probably going to be my one to keep an eye on, like we usually do, that Philip Hawes and Chris Curtis fight. I think Alec Kinta and Bobby Green definitely fight of the night potential right there. Either that one or Gaethje and Chandler for fight of the night, I'm thinking.
Yeah, the fight that I want to see is I want to see Bobby Green and Kenta. I mean, everybody know I'm a Bobby Green fan, but I want to see a different Bobby Green in this fight, man. I don't want to see him waiting for the fight to develop. I want to see him take the fight to Iaquinta, because I think that's what gets Bobby in trouble when it comes to the scorecards, is because he's being reactionary instead of being the one that's bringing the action to his opponent. So, and actually I was shocked by this, that I'm looking at this, Bobby Green is actually favored in this fight. He's minus 175 to I.I. Kendall's plus 150. So that's the fight I want to see. I want to see Bobby switch things up, man. I want to see him be the aggressor in this fight.
Is that where you want to start with predictions? You want to start with that one?
Man, who you got winning this fight, Keith?
Give me a second to look at the stats here. I got to look at this over. Okay, 169. I'll say this. If it goes to a decision, I feel like Bobby Green, like, he, one thing he is good at, sadly, is coming up short on scorecards. So
yep.
If it goes to a decision, I think they give it to Iaquinta. I think Bobby Green is going to need to finish this fight to make sure he gets the win, because it just seems like I have him up on scorecards and then they don't give him the decision. You know, it doesn't seem to work out for him on the scorecards. So, yeah, I think if it goes to decision, Iaquinta wins. I think Bobby, if there's a finish, I think Bobby Green finishes Iaquinta. But I'm gonna go against the grain and say that Iaquinta will win by decision.
Man, this is tough for me, man, because I feel the same way. I think if Bobby don't come out and be the aggressor, he's going to get the short end of the judges' scorecard. Although he may be the person that lands the most shots, might be the one that, you know, that's in control of the fight. But being the guy that goes second, long enough to win you the fight on the scorecards. But I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to say Bobby Green won this fight on the scorecards this time. I don't think he can finish Iaquinta, but I'm going to go against the grain and say Bobby won the decision. Although we know he normally comes up short on the scorecards. So let's jump into it, man. All right, we're not going to jump into Gaethje and Chandler yet. We're going to go kind of off script a little bit. I don't know who this Burgos guy is or this Quarantilla guy. Do you know about them, Keith?
Yeah, Burgos puts on bangers. He had
Burgos?
That crazy. Huh?
Is his name Shane? Yeah. Okay, Shane,
yeah.
Burgos. Okay.
Shane Burgos. Yeah, he just had a banger not that long ago with Edson Barboza, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, he lost to Barboza. He lost to Josh Emmett.
Billy Quarantillo, I don't think I've really seen him fight, maybe like once or twice. I'd probably have Shane Burgos winning that fight, though, because Shane Burgos he's a demon, man. You gotta be a certain type of cat to be able to beat Shane Burgos. He's a warrior. He's not going to go down easy at all. So I'd probably take Shane Burgos winning that. Dude is durable.
I'm trying to see who Quarantillo who he is for. He really hasn't fought anybody that I can recognize off the top of my head. But he's won four out of his last five fights, mostly by actually, he's won. Woo, this guy's actually – but he ain't really fought nobody. So I really can't get his record, like – like a woo-woo, because he won his fight in Dana White Contender Series in July 2019, and he had his first UFC fight December 7, 2019. So if I had to pick, I would probably go with Shane Burgos also because he's fought better competition. And I have seen Shane fight. And he did have a good fight with Edson Barboza. So being that he's had a tougher role, I think that leads to him being the better fighter, better experience. So I'm going to go with Shane Burgos. I say he wins this fight by second round KO. I'm going with Shane Burgos. Okay. Let's jump to this fight. We got my man Frankie Edgar fighting Marlon Vera in the bantamweight division. Frankie basically fighting in Madison Square Garden, which is in the backyard away. He's from New Jersey. How do you see this fight going, Keith? If Vera is a minus 175, Edgar is a plus 150. Man, this is a good fight.
Let me see.
This is a good fight.
Who's the favorite?
Marlon Vera.
I was thinking about this fight a little bit the other day, and what I thought to myself is every time they give Frankie Edgar a guy like this, he dominates them so badly. You know, every time you have an upcoming guy who's breaking into the rankings, he just destroys them. So, man. But at the same time, I feel like, you know, that's 3-4 years ago. Like, when's the last time they had somebody like that and he did that too? A couple of years ago, probably. Maybe he's been fighting, like, championship fights since then. He hasn't been given those kinds of fights in a couple of years too. Man, Marlon Vera is good too. I don't know.
Yeah.
But then my question is, because I think Frankie is gonna take Marlon Vera down. That's what I think is gonna happen. I think Frankie's gonna wrestle in this fight. I think it's gonna be, if Frankie's gonna win, I see it being like when he fought Jeremy Stephens. Like he pretty much. Jeremy Stephens thought he was coming out there to just stand in the middle of the octagon to strike with Frankie. Frankie took him down and just beat the shit out of him, like, and just leaning his weight on him, just beating the shit out of him in Madison Square Garden a couple of years ago. If Frankie is going to win, that's how I see it happening. Damn, Marlon Vera, huh? Yeah, he's tough. Yeah, my gut, honestly, is saying Marlon Vera wins the fight. Like, he TKOs Frankie or something like that. But I'd rather see Frankie do what he does. So I'm going to go with Frankie using his wrestling in this fight and beating the shit out of him on the canvas. That's what I think is going to happen. And I think Frankie will have a unanimous decision, a pretty clear unanimous decision just using his wrestling.
I want to so badly agree with you because I am a huge Frankie Edgar fan. I think Frankie's better days are behind him. I didn't like the way he lost his last fight by, man, I want to say it was bad. Yeah, he lost his last fight to Corey Sandhagen. And Frankie has lost 3 of his last 5 fights, whereas Marlon Vera has been win, lose, and he won his last fight. So his pattern is he's supposed to lose this fight. But I'm going to pick Marlon Vera to win this fight, man. I know Frankie is a tough guy, but I'm going to take Marlon Vera to win this fight. I'm going to say... Damn, I don't want him to knock my boy out, man. But I think Frankie gets finished in this fight. I think Marlon Vera wins this fight via late second round TKO. I think Frankie's better days are behind him. I think the move to 135 should have happened maybe after he lost his belt in the 145 division. I think he should have moved down to 135. But, yeah, man, I got Marlon Vera, second round TKO. All right, Keys, we're going to jump into this fight. Rose Namajunas versus Wally Zhang, 2. The last fight.
What? Rose, why you skip Gaethje and Chandler?
Because we're going to do that one next.
Okay.
I'm doing the card the way I think it should have been lined up.
Okay. I respect it.
Yeah. So, the last fight we had on Rose Namajunas, actually, this fight is basically a call-it fight. They got Wally at minus 115, and once again, Rose getting no respect at a minus 105, so basically it's a call-em fight. The last fight, Namajunas won first round TKO and got her title back. So, we get the rematch. How do you see the rematch going, bro?
All right, well, this is what I thought about with this fight, right, the past couple of days. Rose Namajunas, one thing is true. And what is that? She kicked ass in rematches. She kicked ass in rematches. And win or lose, when she – think about the last two times she rematched somebody, and both of them former champions. She beat Joanna. They wanted to do the rematch. What happened in the rematch? Rose dominated Joanna again. She didn't finish her, but she dominated. It was like she was even more in control of the fight the second time, kind of like how Jon Jones is when he rematches somebody. It seems like he hasn't figured out like five times more than he did the first time. Then she fought Andrade. When she fought Andrade, like pretty much body slams her, and Rose looked like she landed on her neck. I thought her neck was broken. I was devastated. Everybody in the bar when I was in Hooters was like freaking out, and they're like, oh my God. And then the UFC is all happy, and they're like, oh, you know, Andrade's the new champion and all this. And I'm like, yo, is anybody checking to make sure Rose is not dead, bro? Like, she literally like landed on her neck with that body slam.
Yeah, she got speared.
That was bad. Like, they didn't even, like, react to it. It seemed like nobody was even paying attention. I'm like, yo, is anybody checking to see if your neck is broken? But luckily it wasn't. And in the second Andrade fight, she pretty much dominated that fight, too, from what I remember. So I had Rose winning this fight. The first time she knocked out Wiley, I think, in the first round with the head kick. And I just think Wiley will look better in this one, but I don't think she'll be good enough to beat Rose. I just think Rose is better overall. Rose is the best overall in that division, and I think she's just going to show that once again. And I think this fight, I want to say decision, but I want to say unanimous decision for Rose, but at the same time, I'd actually like to see some stoppages. I don't want to call all decisions, so I'm gonna go with my famous
third round.
I'm gonna go with the third round.
Key special.
TKO. Bros down the units.
The crazy part is I totally agree with you. Rose and rematches, she just looks better. I think she implements a different game plan in this fight. I think she comes out striking, but she ends up submitting Wally Zhang. We haven't seen Wally Zhang fight off her back since she's been in the UFC. So I think Rose takes her down, makes her scramble, and I think Rose submits her. In the second round, I'll go with Rose Namajunas, no doubter, second round submission. All right. Here we go on what should be the co-main event of the evening. The people's co-main event. That's what me and Keys call it. Justin Gaethje.
Oh, yeah, this is the people's fight right here, man, 100%.
Versus Michael Chandler. Chandler is a plus 170. Justin Gaethje is a minus 200. All right, Keith, who you got?
So this is going to be devastating because I think, and this is my theory, I think Gaethje, I think Gaethje's, like, mentality right now going into the fight is going to bite him in this fight. What I'm seeing from him and Chandler is this. Well, first of all, I'll say I think Chandler has a lot more power than Gaethje, so I'll say that first. I think if either one were to knock each other out, I think Chandler knocks him out if that were to come down to. I just – the way – looking at him in the Oliveira fight, looking at him versus Dan Hooker, I mean, he puts away Dan Hooker in the first round. You could just clearly tell he has a lot of power. These guys put Oliveira away. I think that was in the first round. Like, clearly, yep. Chandler is very powerful. And Gaethje throws a lot of volume, but he's more so – more of the time, it's like he's going to wear away on you and then eventually KO you. He doesn't always have those quick KOs where I feel like Chandler does. Chandler has the power for those early KOs because the power is just too much. But another thing I think that's working against Gaethje in this fight, and I think this is an even bigger factor, is that he's so focused on what's next after the fight. He seems like, you know, the media's talking to him about whether or not he's the guy to get the title fight. It seems like that's a lot on his mind. Like, Islam wins the fight, and then, you know, DC was over there, you know, in the cage with Islam saying, you know, that he thinks Islam should be next for the title. And then, you know, Gaethje's, like, getting at DC, and they're, like, beefing on, you know, Instagram or whatever that was. Gaethje's, like, going at DC saying, like, you know, I'm the next one for the title. And, you know, once I win this fight, I'm fighting for the title or we riot. You know, then he even said that at the presser. He said, if I don't fight for the title after this, we riot. So, and then when you look at Chandler, you don't hear anything like that from Chandler. Chandler is not even mentioning the title. Chandler seems like he's very focused on Justin Gaethje, and he's focused on this fight. You know, when he's asked about Oliveira, yeah, I've heard Chandler say, yeah, that would be great to get that one back. But you don't see him with this mentality like he's already looking through the fight and he's already thinking about the title fight. He doesn't seem to be in that mentality at all. He seems very focused on this fight. And I think that Chandler's going to go in more focused. I think Gaethje's mind is not going to be fully there. He's thinking forward too much, and I think it's going to come back to bite him. I think it'll be good for, I think that probably the first round, and I say Chandler knocks him out in the second round. Chandler by KO, second round.
Well, you know how I am about Michael Chandler. If he doesn't get it done in the first round, he normally loses. Now, in this fight, both of these guys, I don't think anybody's going to try to take – I don't think – well, we know Justin Gaethje ain't going to try to take down. Chandler can do something on the mat, but he's trying to finish you with his hands. So, man, this fight is hard to call, Keith. I want to go with Chandler so bad. But I'm going to go with Justin Gaethje. I think if Justin comes in focused, knowing what he has to do, and he puts volumes of punches on Chandler, and I mean combinations, not just one shot and move, but he needs to put combinations together to put this fight, to take this fight to Chandler. I am going to go, oh man, this one tough to call. This one tougher to call than I catch a Bobby Green. Okay. All right, Lee.
Got that.
Do I want, I'm gonna go, man. Chandler has to win in the first round. I understand he has to win in the first round. It's just something about him after the first round that doesn't. I don't know what happens to him after the first round. I'm going Michael Chandler. No, I'm not. We're going Justin Gaethje, second round TKO. Justin Gaethje, second round TKO is my final answer.
You said Gaethje TKO second round?
Yes, sir.
So we both got the second round. Okay. So we'll see. Yeah. Guess who in the second round. One thing that I just want to break out, and I think it's perfect time for me to drop this on y'all, and you probably haven't seen this yet because it just came out 13 minutes ago, ESPN. Justin Gaethje versus Michael Chandler will open the UFC 268 pay-per-view main card. UFC Chief Business Officer Hunter Campbell confirmed, first reported by Ariel Helwani, Gaethje's coach Trevor Whitman needed the time in between fights before Rose Namajunas and Kamaru Usman compete.
Wow. So he has three fighters fighting on the main card.
Yeah, and I can understand that. I mean, he would have been coaching three fights back to back to back. He would have, because he has Gaethje, Rose, and Usman.
Yeah. I don't like the Burgos Quarantillo fight being on the main card. I think Bobby Green and I Kenta should be on that card. But once again, I can't be a hypocrite because I've always said that sometimes if you see star potential in a fighter, putting them on the main card, and maybe the UFC sees star potential in Shane Burgos or this Quarantillo guy. So that's probably why they're on the main card. So I can't be a hypocrite, and we're just going to move on to the main event. We got Kamaru Usman versus Colby Covington 2. We got Usman as a minus 330 to Colby Covington plus 260. All right, Keith, who you got? I think this is going to be a thing.
So what?
I think this is going to be a thing.
What's going to be a thing?
Because if you look at Usman, like you said about Namajunas looked better in the second fight than she did in the first fight.
Right.
I think this is going to be a thing. I think Usman is going to look better in this fight than he did in the first fight.
And
he finished Colby in the first fight. So,
right.
Who you got, bro?
So, my thing is this. I feel like, you know, Usman definitely has made me more of a fan. I wasn't a
me
fan
too.
Of him, you know, when he was coming up. You know, I remember watching his fight versus this guy, Amel Meek, and I was like, okay, like, this is whatever. He kind of struggled in that fight. I was like, oh, this guy might not be that good. Then I saw he was, like, beating everybody. He was still undefeated later. Then I saw him in the rankings. Then he fought Woodley, and I just thought his style was so boring. I was like, okay, this is a snooze. You know, he fights Masvidal, so I was boring. I'm like, this is a snooze. But then recently, he's made me more of a fan. You know, in his last couple of fights, you know, he started training with, you know, Trevor Whitman. He got his boxing has gotten better. Now his last two fights, he finished both guys. And a lot of people are saying that. A lot of people are saying that we haven't seen Colby Covington get any better, but we've only seen Usman getting better. And this is the one thing that I want to contest that with. And I'd get on tact. I have been attacked on Twitter for even supporting Colby Covington, but I am a fan of his, so it is what it is. To me, Colby Covington has the, you know, it's pretty much the same thing as Donald Trump, where people don't like him because of things he says, not necessarily because of things he does. And I think that's very much the case with Covington. The thing that he's actually good at, you can't hate on him for it, because Covington, whether you like the things he says or not, is very likely, you know, a top 10, if not top 5 pound for pound in the UFC. So that just is what it is. And if you didn't have Usman, Covington would be the champion. You know, if Usman and Covington are like the 1 and 2 in the whole division. But I'm going with Covington to win this fight. I think Covington's going to shock a lot of people here. It's one of those occasions where Usman is so heavily favored. I don't know what the betting line is, but in the public, he's so heavily favored, and it seems like one of those times where I think the public will be a little bit surprised, and I think there's too much assumption by recency bias. You know, there's too much picks that are being made off recency bias, that's okay, recency bias, but just remember that, you know, you feel that way because you've seen Usman fight recently. You haven't seen as much of Kobe, but don't forget how good he is, though. And he also has changed camps since the last time that him and Usman fought. So a lot of stuff with Kobe is you know, it's yet to be seen until the fight. And I can understand how people would not pick him, because you've seen Usman more recently, and his last two wins are TKO or KO finishes. So he looked great. But I think this one, you know, it's more that I'd be happy to see Covington win the belt. You know, I want to see him win the belt. I think that'd be a good moment. And I don't really know. I'm not really sure how I have him winning. I might just go with Evan's style, just like make him my pick and no method of victory.
I don't think Kobe can knock him out. I don't think he can knock Usman out. Can he submit him? Maybe. But as far as knocking him out, I don't think he can do that. So I think his road to victory is either going to be submission or a decision. I just don't think he can knock him out. But I understand what you're saying. You could be a fan of the fighter, but not the person. Just like I always say about Floyd Mayweather. You know, the guy's a great boxer, but he's a terrible person in my book. So you can always be a fan of the professional, but not a fan of the personal. So, you know, when you were talking about Colby Covington, I'm going with Usman to win this fight. I just think he gets better in the second fight, and he's done. You know, when me and you didn't like him, it was because he was a wrestler. He was a guy that take you down, man hump you for 3 rounds, get a decision. But then he done got his striking up to his ground game, which has definitely made him a better fighter, actually a dominant champion. So I'm going to say he wins this fight. Kobe is tough. I don't think Usman finishes him this time. I think Usman wins this fight by split decision. I think Kobe hangs in there, steals a couple rounds because of his cardio and his activity. In the long run, I think Usman wins the championship rounds to edge out a split decision. And we move on, hopefully, to no more rematches for Usman. Hopefully, Edwards will beat Masvidal, and we get Usman versus Edwards, even though that's a rematch too. So, goddamn. But, you know, great show. We review UFC 267. We just preview UFC 268. Any last words, Keith?
Nah, that's all I got. That was a great show. I think we killed it getting to both events in 1 hour. That's pretty much all I got. I appreciate, you know, the people who listen. if you do listen, thank you so much and enjoy the events. And yeah, that's all I got.
Yeah, for the people that call in, don't think we're ignoring your call. Sometimes we just be up against it with time, and we just got to keep flowing. But if we get any future call-ins, we'll jump y'all in the call, you know, after we finish our points about a certain topic, and, you know, we'll get to your call and see what you got to say. But with that being said, everybody have a great weekend. Take care of yourself. Take care of each other. Practice social distance still. Vaccination is a personal choice. That being said, positive people with positive energy get positive results. Lynn Key signing off. And as always, we end the show with a peace.